This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's tape number 433, March 21st, 1980, side one. I made a tape several weeks ago, tape number 430. That was February 29th, 1980. And I played some music from the opera Sweeney Todd, and on the printed sheet that accompanied the tape, the quotation of Stephen Sondheim and Harold Prince, "No one can help, nothing can hide you. Isn't that Sweeney there beside you?" That's from the musical opera Sweeney Todd. And I referred to quotations of Ronald Reagan and called him California's Sweeney Todd, and George Bush, a candidate then at the time for President of the United States. He may be in the future, and talked about some murders that he covered up when he was director of the CIA, and how he believes that we shouldn't intrude into other people's, quote, morality if they want to continue these assassinations, and it's expedient for them. Of course, the name Sweeney Todd is taken, as I say, from a play on Broadway now that will be part of the New York opera repertoire, and it's about a barber in England on Fleet Street who commits a lot of murders, one continuous murder after another, to avenge society for wrongs that were done to him. It's a very important play, and of course this week we have a new name in the news, just coincidentally, the name Dennis Sweeney. So again, we're back to Sweeney Todd, and here was a Stanford student, an anti-war activist, somebody concerned with civil rights, who was in the South working for black people to get them registered to vote. He was injured by a bomb in the civil rights movement, and he came back to avenge somebody that he didn't trust, who he felt betrayed him, and murdered former Congressman Alan Lowenstein. So Dennis Sweeney that is in the anti-war, the peace movement, the lovable person can be brought out if they are manipulated by the proper set of circumstances, and most of this tape will be on Alan Lowenstein today. I did want to continue with Abscam 2 and 3 and 4. It's so terribly important. And I have a list of other stories here that took place this week, but I'm just going to have to put them off, and we'll do. Primarily, we'll talk about Allard Lowenstein, because it does encompass a whole era about what is happening, who his friends are, my views of the murder, and particularly the involvement of Dennis Sweeney, because it's a terribly important story. Next week, I hope to get into some of these events. I don't want you to lose track of them. I'll just list them briefly, the information I was going to share with you, and we'll get back to it. Some has to do, as I say, with many articles on Abscam and the FBI investigations that are taking place, the update on Raymond Pecunier with the murder of the 33 informers in the New Mexico jail, the FBI plans to attack organized crime across the United States, the links of Jimmy Carter, Robert Strauss, the drug connections to Panama, Vesco, and the Swiss banks. New stories came out this week. More about the CIA controls and what it means and how they're tightening their controls. I'll go into the Dr. Herman Tarnauer murder in New York with Jean Harris, the school marm, and the important avenues to look into her background and the motives for that murder. The Kenneth Parnell Barbara Mathias kidnapping ring in Ukiah, Mendocino, California, and the implications of this, Ted Kennedy and the Chappaquiddick affair, and that mysterious Helga Wagner and the telephone calls. I want to go into the mafia trial in New Jersey involving the Genovese family, the late Anthony Russo. New information coming out on that murder trial, the several people being indicted there, the New Jersey coroners that are filled with inadequate persons charging what are obvious murders being opened again, called suicide or natural death, and the problem of organized crime in the coroner's offices all over the United States and overseas. A woman and her husband, Charlene and Lyman Smith, were murdered this week. He was about to be appointed judge on the Superior Court by Jerry Brown, and a friend was to come over and tell him he was sure to be in, and he and his wife were plunged into death. Mayor Janet Smith, a mayor in Vermont, was murdered. Ex-Mayor Russell Lloyd from Indiana was murdered. There's millions of dollars of cash missing in Miami, diamonds floating from Israel to Los Angeles, security exchange documents missing. Iowa has a state of emergency. The farmers are bankrupt because of up to $10 million in fraudulent money taken from them and still missing, part of this general organized crime. I'm sure the links of stolen securities, the middleman, the working man flounced out again and robbed. There's a secret trial in Contra Costa County, the hot, most sensitive trial going on in the United States today. No information coming out about that at all, and we'll go into possible reasons for secrecy. Five defendants in Los Angeles and the Abscam connections were dismissed. They were responsible for killing Frank, the Bomb, Bomb Fincero, member of organized crime. That has to do with Judge Pragerson, who was about to be given gifts or bribe, and the FBI warned him before he could get the bribes. All of a sudden, their case was dismissed. Articles coming out this week on Kansas City mob murders, 11 in the past 3 years, and the implications of the FBI and former FBI Director Clarence Kelly, who now works with Wackenhut organization in Florida, and they are in charge of security out here at Fort Ord, at military bases and airports. Mob murders in Kansas City, the Teamsters murders. A witness, James Fratriano, tells how he took part in 9 murders for the Teamsters, that La Cosa Nostra controls the Teamsters organizations, and he's testifying against La Cosa Nostra in San Francisco. Attorney General William Scott was indicted in Illinois one day after his nomination, the primaries. He was running for senator from Illinois and was defeated the next day, indicted. Allegedly has large sums of money, makes trips to Europe quite frequently, didn't declare the campaign money. And his attorney, one of his attorneys in this case, is Vincent Bugliosi, the prosecutor for Charles Manson, working with the CIA and covering up the narcotic rings and drug connections in Los Angeles that had to do with the Sharon Tate LaBianca nest of worms. And then the New Jersey Abscam witnesses, there's another couple in New Jersey, David Emmerich and Bonnie Pellicer, who are missing. Their house, they found instruments that they were bludgeoned with, flesh in the walls and so forth. This couple are missing. They have to do with the Abscam investigations in New Jersey. There's more going on in Pennsylvania. There are many Sweeney Todds and murders and blood literally dripping from the pages of the files every day. I'm opening up an important interconnecting links that I couldn't possibly do in an hour a week. It just really hurts not to be able to tie these tight together for you with all the implications. And I simply run them off now because of the frustration of not being able to handle them. But hopefully in the next few weeks, we'll get back to each of these things with a little more detail. But I just want you to know some of the stories that are going on. And in your own cities and hometowns, if you have judges, lawyers, soon to be appointed, people that lost the election, about to win the election, who are being murdered, send them, and maybe we can put them together and come out with some kind of a profile or nest and see if they do link to the organized crime Abscam investigations that are going on at the present time. Several months ago on a tape, I talked about the hit-and-run accident of a attorney in San Francisco, James Martin McInnes, and he's working with private sleuth Harold Lipset. And these men were working with a man who has been investigated involving hash that came into San Francisco, a large shipment of hash from Afghanistan, 547 pounds of Afghan hash patties were slipped into San Francisco before the DEA could get on their trail. And I did a story just briefly mentioning the death, the untimely death of James Martin McInnes at an intersection in San Francisco. And then a few months later, the San Francisco Chronicle has an article that he was attorney for one of the men involved in this hash situation. There's been a long series of articles in the Chronicle, and I'll update them for you, but it's very important to know that what looks like hit-and-run cases or suicides or natural deaths all of a sudden, months later, years later, you find out that these people were very important in this large narcotic traffic pattern, which is barely being exposed now, but because of the FBI use of informers who are willing to talk, there'll be many, many people killed all over the country to keep a lid on how high up in the government the narcotics traffic really rolls. With that little resume of blood and trials and so forth and promises of tapes to come, we'll go on to Alan Lowenstein. First, who was Alan Lowenstein? And then secondly, who is the man who killed him? Of course, many of you who have taken the tapes for a long time know that I'm very interested in mind control and the use of hypnosis, assassins, trained assassins to wipe out persons for any number of reasons, and also the usefulness of programming people with electrode implants or drugs or hypnotism to let them become murderers because they're least suspected if they melt into the milieu in which they work to begin with. Instead of just walking in and shooting, you can have your choice. Dan White could be hypnotized and go in and kill Harvey Milk and George Moscone at a very important time when Jonestown was happening, and there were links of these people to Jonestown. You could hypnotize a person and throw them right in and their memories erased, and they're useful as assassins because they can't reveal what they did or follow it up afterwards. This was the case with Sirhan. Sirhan, when Robert Kennedy was shot at the Ambassador Hotel, Sirhan has been in a state of a trance or hypnosis ever since about the events that occurred. And Jack Ruby suffered the same consequences after shooting Lee Harvey Oswald. His mind was erased, and he was not very able to go into why he did it or who he saw before or how it happened that he was allowed to walk in the police department and kill Lee Harvey Oswald, the only suspect in the assassination of President John Kennedy. I became very interested in mind control and the use of hypnosis and electrode implants when I studied information about Dr. Jose Delgado at Yale University, his electronically controlled persons and animals and his psychosurgery, and then the position of people like Jack Ruby and Sirhan Sirhan or James Earl Ray or Artie Bremer, who shot at George Wallace. And David Berkowitz is one of these, and there's many, many more. There's an army of people under mind control that are useful for murders, political murders, to silence people. And then these zombies have no recall or don't sound logical as to why they actually got into the position they did when they did the killings. There have been many articles and documents about the mind control, particularly of Sirhan, but there are quotations that come regarding Jack Ruby at the time that I say he shot Lee Harvey Oswald. There was a Dr. W. Bromberg, a psychiatrist from New York, who was quoted in literature and books saying that Ruby was preset to attack. There definitely was a block to his thinking. It was not part of his original endowment. A Dr. M. Guttmacher from Baltimore said Ruby's brain had been damaged and he couldn't figure out how, that he showed functional psychosis, not organic, and he defined functional psychosis as a psychotic condition for which there is no known organic cause. He didn't have brain damage. There was a Dr. Schaefer from Yale University, staff psychologist, clinical professor of psychiatry at Yale, who said Ruby lost the ability to control his own actions. He appears to feel not in control of his body actions, as if they occurred independently of his conscious will at times. And then Melvin Belli, Jack Ruby's lawyer, was quoted as saying, motivation for killing Lee Harvey Oswald came from some strange manifestation of Ruby's brain that could not be accounted for. Jack Ruby went to a telegraph office where he was to send a telegram to a woman called Little Lynn, who telephoned him. He left his apartment, then went to the office and walked down the ramp, was allowed, or was in a car in the basement of the police station and came out and shot Lee Harvey Oswald. But these are just some descriptions from an attorney and three doctors about the state of mind of Jack Ruby. And I bring this up because I had studied mind control, as I say, and the quotations of these people going back from 1964 up to the present day, and have approximately 20 books on mind control and government programs, a good library of some of the best books, and then many, many articles, a huge filing cabinet drawer of instances of known electrode implants and mind control. So I've studied it quite at length in terms of how it relates to specific political activities, assassinations, and causes for political effects. Now, just last week, Ted Kennedy was campaigning for President of the United States, and Alan Lowenstein was very vocal down in Miami trying to get the Jewish vote because of the goof of the United Nations of Jimmy Carter and the vote against Israel, and he was rallying, of course, Jewish support or the left support for Ted Kennedy in Illinois, and he would have done it in New York. And just at a time that he was opposing Jimmy Carter or trying to bring out any latent feeling for Ted Kennedy that any of the candidates could muster, he wanted these voters to come out of the woodwork for Ted Kennedy at a time when Jimmy Carter seems to be winning, right after calling attention to the goof of Carter with a Jewish vote down in Florida. The next week, Alan Lowenstein was murdered in New York City. At the time that this goof went on of Jimmy Carter and his anti-Semitic stance that he's been showing a little more each week, I had a feeling of calling Ted Kennedy again. I swore to myself I never would, but I felt, you know, the only way Ted is going to win, particularly after the stories coming out about the Chappaquiddick phone calls and so forth, the only way he could ever win would be to tell the truth about what happened to John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy, his brothers. And then if he tried the route of just going along and opposing Carter on political events and not meeting him face to face, he couldn't possibly win. And Carter isn't out there campaigning at all, and Ted Kennedy is just talking in the wind. And one of the people that worked hand in glove with him in this trying to win the presidency was Alan Lowenstein. And then he was murdered, shot down last week. Now, the murder of Alan Lowenstein is simply a matter of knowing too much, too late, and doing nothing with it. There were stories, at one time Alan Lowenstein was in San Francisco with Bob Treber on his radio program at KGO. And off the air, he sort of suggested that Robert Kennedy was going to wait until he was president of the United States in 1968. Elections, then he'd open up the story of who killed John Kennedy. Robert Kennedy never lived. Then Alan Lowenstein became very active in the investigation of Robert Kennedy's assassination, and he knew the A to Z of that, even though he suppressed the Thane Caesar connections in the Ambassador Hotel and the Lockheed, the employment of Thane Caesar, the fact that Thane Caesar now works, I understand, at La Costa for organized crime. Alan Lowenstein had the ability to comprehend who killed Robert Kennedy, but he never did anything about it. But he was very active in gathering information and usurping some of the researchers while staying off a lot of the mind control of Sirhan and the use of another assassin standing behind Robert Kennedy. Alan Lowenstein was active at one time investigating the Robert Kennedy assassination and working for Ted Kennedy. Never active in the mind control field of people like David Berkowitz in New York, being victims of mind control, fighting, not fighting overtly, but avoiding the use of the mind control of the assassins until finally one of the zombies erased him out. He didn't work on the mind control, and he didn't expose who killed John Kennedy or Robert Kennedy, and trying to work for Ted Kennedy, he was murdered. And none of this came out, and it's a question of knowing too much, too late, and sitting on it for whatever reasons he sat on it. He never chose to expose some of the facts in these cases. My only contact with Alan Lowenstein was after the Boston Conference on Conspiracies in 1975, and I went to New York City, and there was a conference. I was talking at the Elgin Theater to a group of people, and there was a conference at New York University put on by Mark Lane and Alan Lowenstein, and some people wanted Mae Brussel to speak there. And among them was Alan Lowenstein, who said, "I'll never appear on the platform with Mae Brussel." He's never come to the House for research. He's never corresponded. He's never wanted any of the information that I've had. He stayed arm's distance from me. And so far as I know, the only researcher that he ever contacted or had a lot of work with was Lillian Castellano in Los Angeles, in which he told me that former Congressman Lowenstein was coming to visit her to get her research on Robert Kennedy's assassination. I warned her over and over again, you know, be careful of Alan Lowenstein. I don't trust him. I believe he works with the CIA. He'll drain you. He'll take your information. He won't use it, and he won't expose it. Be very careful of him. And she let Alan in the house, and she shared her information. And then she really grieved shortly before she died, and she died just 2 years ago. She was really sorry that she had let Alan Lowenstein in the house, and she told that to me, and she agreed that I was right, that he would take information, that he would use some of her information and suppress the other, never really giving her credit for what she did and never carrying on the fight that Lillian was doing to open up the John Kennedy and the Robert Kennedy assassinations. There are a lot of people who loved Alan Lowenstein very much when he was living or when he was dead. They praised him with great words. My friend Rush Harp was one of his closest friends, and I've had differing opinions with various people about Alan Lowenstein, and just as I have had about I.F. Stone. My only guide, say, on a scale of 1 to 10 is not what people are associated with, but what they really accomplished. And if they could chalk up some accomplishments along the lines that I've been working on in exposing assassins and overturning the courts of certain criminals, political people that are locked up in American prisons, that could undo some of the legal knots that are binding us, such as the new laws on the CIA or the Senate Bill 1 that Ted Kennedy is getting us into, that terrible bind. Anyone who overturns these bad laws, who exposes murders that are lies, the official government versions that are lies, that works towards peace is, on a scale of 1 to 10, is the top in my view. And I don't rate people on who they mingle with or what they say they're going to do, but on the end result of what they do. Lowenstein was described as a man of peace. He saved us from the war in Vietnam. He was against violence. He was idealistic, humanistic, and conscientious. Those were some of the adjectives that were in the newspaper this week about Alan Lowenstein. For those of you who don't know him or don't know why I have opinions about him, I'll briefly run down that he worked for all the right causes, but everyone he worked for was a loser and went backward. And once they were dead, there wasn't much more done about it. He was sent to South Africa, supposedly on some investigations or apartheid cases, very early in his career, and yet South Africa became more and more repressive, and there wasn't anything that white Americans were doing for apartheid or South Africa or have done to this day. He was described as working on behalf of the oppressed, but he was very closely linked to people from the intelligence community, the CIA, offices in Rockefeller Center. I don't know why that helps the oppressed. It doesn't mean you have to have offices in the slums, but it's an interesting place to be while you work, in quotes, with the oppressed. The newspaper described him as having sessions with underground in Franco, Spain, at the time of the Spanish Revolution, but he's not associated with the Lincoln Brigade, or I haven't seen any quotations from them. I've seen them from Pete McCloskey and Bill Moyers of the CIA and Bill Buckley, friends of the CIA, but I haven't seen anything from the people that actually fought against Franco in Spain. He walked in the South with Martin Luther King, and Martin Luther King was assassinated, and I wasn't aware that Alan Lowenstein helped the House Select Committee on Assassinations or wanted to find out who killed King. Mrs. King was at his funeral, but I haven't realized that he was working hard with researchers to get the killer of Martin Luther King. He went to Yale Law School. He's very close to Buckley, and that's another can of worms with the CIA. He was the son of a physician and biochemist who taught at Columbia University. He led the campaign for Adlai Stevenson, a student campaign for Stevenson, and then Stevenson was murdered shortly after the Bay of Pigs invasion that was called off by John Kennedy. Stevenson was poisoned in London, and never investigation into the killings of Stevenson. He worked for Robert Kennedy, who was murdered, and Lowenstein didn't get into that investigation until Ted Chiarock had made the movie The Second Gun. And as I say, I was doing radio shows since 1971 on the murder of Robert Kennedy and doing investigations from the time he was killed. And Lillian Castellano in L.A. and other people were becoming more open about our investigations, and this movie had been made, so Alan Lowenstein jumped into that. He worked for the National Student Association, which was identified as a CIA front. It was completely taken over the CIA right after he was working with that. He pushed the campaign of Eugene McCarthy, described in the book Who's Who in the CIA, and up till this election, McCarthy isn't running this year, but for the last years, he's always split the Democratic vote and assured that the Republicans really got in. McCarthy was part of the CIA. He organized the Dump Johnson in 1968. Johnson was dumped, and in came Richard Nixon in the Watergate team, and that was a very nice manipulation. After they dumped Johnson, Robert Kennedy was killed, and Nixon was in office. Alan Lowenstein was with a lot of losers. He's described as a loser. He won an election in the House of Representatives once. He ran six other times, I believe, and lost, or almost six, ran for the Senate and lost. He went out to Stanford University, where he met the man who was, he was then a student, who was to kill him in the future, this Dennis Sweeney. And Stanford University, of course, is the law school, the medical school, and the history department are terribly controlled by the intelligence community, and that's where the Hoover Library is in the tower, and Stanford Research and their mind control experiment stations, which we'll go into later. He was an unpaid representative at the United Nations sent by Jimmy Carter. That's interesting that United Nations appointment would be given by Jimmy Carter to Alan Lowenstein, who had so many buddies in the CIA, because Lowenstein on the surface, or always was, very close to John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Ted Kennedy. So it's interesting that an opponent of Jimmy Carter's would be given a position at the United Nations. They say he was a close friend of another Yale graduate, William Buckley, of the Central Intelligence Agency, whose team, Douglas Caddy and Young Americans for Freedom, were played a very instrumental part in the assassination of John Kennedy and were barely exposed at the time of Watergate. A newspaper article described his close friendship with George Bush and with Mr. Rumsfeld, a boxing partner, former Secretary of Defense. Alan Lowenstein had a lot of interesting connections, which don't prove at all that he was in the intelligence community, but not only did he have these close associations with all of the people that I've mentioned in his in the intelligence community or those that were killed that he never bothered to investigate, but at the time of his death this last week, he was buried at Arlington Cemetery. It's unusual for a Jewish family not to be buried together with the family, and as a public servant with one member, one term in the House of Representatives, Alan Lowenstein was buried in Arlington Cemetery. I thought that was interesting and unusual, unless, as I say, he was also part of the intelligence community. And I've had my suspicions. There's no way to prove it. And the people that love Alan Lowenstein would say that I'm way off the wall, that he was a raving liberal. And yet we're on the brink of World War III, and I don't think that these liberals or the people he's associated with have done a thing to stop the trend that is getting us to face the third war, world war. On the other side of this tape, I'm going into the person who shot Alan Lowenstein, Dennis Sweeney, and a little bit about mind control again and how he was sent to murder him and why I think he murdered him at this time.